Hey, welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John. How are you doing this week, Steve?
I am good. I'm charged up and excited about the world. How are you, John?
Yeah, good, good. Yeah, it's not like anything's going on these days,
Nope.
but we are happy that we have Dmitry Norenko, the CEO of UpSwat, on our episode this week.
Hi, John. Hi, Steve. Thanks a lot for this option to talk with you.
Yeah, great. I'm glad you could join us. Well, why don't you start off with telling us about UpSwat and what it is you guys do?
Yeah, so like all our team, we are bankers. We started our company approximately 20 months ago in Europe. Right now, we are working with a couple of dozens of banks, mainly in Europe. But recently, we scaled to the US. We got two top 10 banks in the US. We are working with a couple of medium-sized banks. We are especially proud that we got the deal with one of the biggest credit bureaus in the US, and we will
Oh,
announce
great.
Like very soon. These corporate guys, they are always thinking about NDAs and what and when exactly you can disclose. But in a couple of
Yeah.
we should do this. So we are fintech, we are startup. This is a challenging business, like for any other young company. But guys, that nowadays this COVID-19 is helping us a lot. It makes the banks to switch online, and this is exactly what we do for them.
Yeah, I know you're a young company because you're still counting your age in months.
Yeah, that's
You're like
correct.
20 and a half months old, and next week will be 21.
Yes.
No, that's an exciting time. So you're working with the credit bureaus, some small banks, and looking to expand, obviously. What is the service that sets you apart from everybody else?
We help the banks to better interact with their small and medium-sized businesses. And not only the banks, also insurance companies, corporates, all those that need to make their lending processes more efficient, to make their marketing more personalized. So we created the technology, which we usually deploy on banking premises. And this technology, this platform, combines API-enabled pipes to 117 apps. Apps that SMBs regular use, like QuickBooks, Salesforce, PayPal, Microsoft Dynamics, Square, even Facebook for business and Uber drivers. So those apps that 33 million of SMBs in the US use mostly every day, they're business apps. And we created the process that motivates these businesses, provide API-enabled, continuous opt-in access to their financials, accountancy, tax returns, accounts in other banks, transactions, everything from their apps.
Oh,
And
so the SMB is totally transparent to all the information is going to the financial institution right away. So they're kind of partnered in data-wise.
yeah, so like how to explain? It's always better to show, and we would be happy to show you one day how we work with the banks, but today this is the podcast. So in general, we have two cases how to motivate businesses share the data. The first one, let's say we call it cabbage approach. Just imagine, John, you are going to the website of the bank. You need to apply for commercial credit card or working capital or
It
lease.
happens. Yep.
That sometimes happens, But even if you need to open deposit, you will face my technology, which is white labeled inside of the bank. So you will see dozens of icons, QuickBooks, Microsoft Dynamics, and lots of others. As I told you, we support 117. And at the website of the bank, the bank will say you something like, please log in into your account in QuickBooks or Xero or PayPal. You have an option to choose. You log in these apps, you type your login and password, which are not stored there and not visualized, no one will see there. And you have an option to share all your financials with the bank. But every time you open your account to the bank, you reduce your loan interest rate. You get various benefits from the bank. You visualize the data you share with the bank to make smarter business decisions. So instead of going to the branches, instead of preparing the books, you apply for the loan completely online by sharing your financial, marketing, sales data with the bank. You give access to this data because this data influences the terms of the deal. And this is your decision, either to share or not to share.
Ah, this sounds like a familiar business model. At Silicon Valley Bank, they make loans to venture bank companies as long as those companies then bank with Silicon Valley Bank so they can monitor their cash, but you create the connection so they can bank and do their transaction and have that same transparency and monitoring between all of the companies they're dealing with.
Yeah, that's correct. So like we come, let's imagine, to Silicon Valley Bank. We deploy our technology. In this technology, 117 apps popular in the US. Any SMB applying for the loan or any other product of the bank has an option to share this data. My technology inside of the bank cleans, structures, standardizes the data, and continuously reassess all the data. But the most important, what is coming from these apps? You can track even the information, like transactions, payroll activity of your clients, even what they do with other banks. This is exciting. And this is continuous access to the data and compliant with all regulations. The clients are happy to share the data because this is positive engagement for them. They influence the terms of the deal with the bank. And it really works. Our success rate is 74%, especially right now when SMBs need money. All of them, they need money. They are ready to share everything.
They're willing to open up these days to keep the cash flow going. So I imagine one of the first questions that you would get is, how do you keep everything secure? Was that one of the big challenges in developing your product, making sure everything is compliant and safe?
Oh, of course. That's why we are always on banking premises or in their private cloud. I can't come to Wells Fargo or Citibank or Capital One and say them that the data of their clients will be trespassing my servers. We are a 20-month-old company. We are the company coming from Europe. So that's why we are coming to them. And at this stage, we are offering them, guys, we deploy our solution on your premises. It's so-called Docker container. It doesn't need a lot of time to be integrated. It's a standalone platform. And you can immediately launch this in the process. And they like this approach because the data never leaves the bank. The bank is responsible for security because our platform is inside of the bank. And we pass compliance and IT security guys pretty fast.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. So so you mentioned that your solution is deployed on-premise, which makes sense, as opposed to it being cloud-based. Was that always the focus of the company to develop an on-prem solution? Or did you come to that after speaking with maybe some bank clients who kind of had some security issues that they were hard to overcome because of a cloud deployment?
Actually, no. So yes, at this stage, when we sell to the banks directly, we offer them on-prem or private cloud approach. But recently, as I told you, we got the deal with one of the biggest credit bureaus in the US. That means that we deploy our platform on their premises. And just imagine 9,000 of fintechs, community banks, credit unions, they will be able to use my technology without any needed integration, just in a couple of hours. So we make this credit bureau as a middleware. That means that their clients, let's imagine Golden One Credit Union or I don't know, Citizens Bank or anyone else, they just need to add so-called iframe add-on, which is very easy to deploy, while the whole backend is inside of the credit bureau. That means that the client of Golden One goes to the website of Golden One. He is applying for working capital. He is authorized in various apps. He is given permission to pull the data from his apps. While the data is stored, analyzed, structured, and standardized inside of credit bureau. In this manner, Golden One avoids integration. Golden One doesn't need to sign any documents, any NDAs. Everything is already signed with the credit bureau. And they can launch really fast. Disadvantage, the data is stored not inside of the bank. It's stored outside of the bank. But this is a well-known credit bureau with great reputation, and the banks trust them. So this is another approach. And for me, this is the great way to scale. I can reach 9,000 of institutions tremendously fast through this partnership.
That's amazing. And you guys got your start in Europe. Where in Europe did you begin this process?
We are Ukrainians. We started in Ukraine. Right now we are working in 6 countries. So this is Ukraine, this is Russia, this is Belarus, this is obviously Canada and the US. And we got the first deals in Spain and UK, but we are not launched. We just signed the documents. So we started in Eastern Europe. We tested our product. We could prove that even on that difficult market where people get used to hide everything, they're ready to share the data. If they have an option not to go to the branch, if they don't need to prepare any papers, but just share the data and to get a better deal through this data, they share.
So how did you guys end up jumping over Western Europe straight to the United States?
We started from Eastern Europe and we got to the US thanks to the University of Berkeley. University of Berkeley created so-called acceleration program, which is called SkyDeck. SkyDeck got investments from very big venture funds like Sequoia, Sierra, Canvas, Mayfield, even Alibaba. So these guys invested in this acceleration program created on their with the help of resources of the university, and they select the best startups coming from the US and abroad. So by joining this Berkeley SkyDeck program, we could reach the valley, we could meet tons of people, and you guys too. And this was our way to the market. So obviously we gave some shares in the company, we got very small check from these guys, but we could meet lots of people. Because we are foreigners, our language is not perfect, our mentality is different, we definitely needed some support. And SkyDeck is something that gave us this.
Your English is excellent, by the way.
It is. It certainly is. Yes.
And I'm glad to see that the pool of Silicon Valley is bringing new ideas and really good ideas like this to the US. What has been the, you know, you've grown very quickly for 20 months to be and multiple continents and kind of established clients. I don't know if there has been any obstacles, but what's been the toughest challenge so far?
The toughest challenge was to, that depends on the region, to be completely transparent. In Eastern Europe, that was very difficult to prove the first client that SMBs will be sharing their financial data. So they just couldn't believe in this. Like people don't like to pay the taxes, they hide everything, how they will share the data from accountancy apps. So we started using what? We started using Cabbage. US Cabbage, US company. We proved that Cabbage is existing. How long? Something around 10 years. And they could provide $10 billion in loans, having no branches, just offering their clients to share transactional data and the data from accountancy apps, marketing apps, and so on. When we are coming to the US, it's not that difficult to prove that people are ready to share the data. More difficult to prove that you are the startup that can handle your promises. You are coming, you are a young company, 20 months old. Yes, you have 25 people in the team, you raised funding, you have happy clients, but happy clients in Europe. So while in the US, you need some time to get happy clients, you know. You know how it's difficult to launch with the bank. And we are working on this. But when we came to the US, US helped us a lot to understand that unlike Europe, the US banks are very focused to help SMBs, to build relationship with SMBs, to become reliable partner for the SMBs, especially during the crisis and after the crisis. So we created so-called SMB dashboard. The closest meaning would be Mint for SMBs. Probably you use Mint, yes, from Intuit, Mint application.
I think I did, a few years ago. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so like Mint is an option to connect your bills, your accounts, get notifications, something like you forgot to pay something, there is the period to pay for your credit card, you need to pay for your gas, electricity, all your expenses, all your assets are structured, standardized. This is what we created for SMBs. Also on-prem, also white-labeled, also iframe add-on, but to online banking. So the case is a little bit different. The client is going to online banking, let's imagine Wells Fargo. And the client has an option to connect his QuickBooks, to connect his Salesforce account, to connect his MailChimp, his Google Analytics, and visualize all the data in one single screen. The bank is saying that there are so many challenges that guys you are facing nowadays. Let us help you to make smarter business decisions. And by connecting the apps, the client gets cash flow predictions. They see if they forgot to pay any invoices. They know if they have some free money to invest in stocks. They can even see benchmarking and compare efficiency of the business with similar businesses. But to be completely transparent with you guys, both cases, which we call Mint for SMBs and Cabbage approach, this is just the motivation to push the clients of the banks to share the data which is usually unavailable to anyone. And we clean, we structure, we standardize the data for risk assessment, marketing automation, and tons of other things.
So normally I would be asking how COVID-19 has been, you know, hurting business and fundraising and all of that. But it sounds like the current environment is creating more demand for your services?
Yes, definitely yes. But you know, like there was one deal with one of the top 20 banks. And before the COVID, we were moving really fast. Everything was nice. But after COVID started, these guys are just like completely busy with payroll protection program. You know, I love this program. I also got money from this program. But like, but it makes so many wonderful people so busy nowadays, because our business owner is like the head of SMB department, you know, like those guys that are managing relationship with SMBs or decide which loans should be provided. And unfortunately, right now, due to these challenging times, yes, it creates more demand for our solution because we help SMBs, we help the banks with alternative data in a legal manner. But still, some processes are much slower than they were before. You are the bankers, guys. You know how the processes are slow in the banks. Right now, it's even slower.
Yeah, I have been reading about a lot of banks who were doing nothing, no other small business loans except PPP. Everything else was on hold. Yeah.
Yes, but PPP will come to the end in any case. The money always comes to the end. Someone will take the final dollar, the last dollar. And what will happen next? This is the question. Because lots of SMBs, dozens of millions of SMBs globally, they face problems. They need access to the money. They are losing clients. Whole industries are dying right now. New industries are replacing them. But still, this is the crisis. This is something that we all should accept. There is recession. There is the crisis. It could happen in any case. The virus just made it come faster. And I strongly believe that the banks should change faster than they were even planning before.
That certainly makes sense. That's pretty interesting. I'm wondering, you know, this is a question that we ask most of our guests here who come on the pod in this crisis, but have you seen any interesting data in terms of either volume or any trends with small businesses?
In our case, yes. So before the crisis, the average success rate of the SMBs sharing the data to get the loan was 62-63%. Right now, it's more than 80%. So people are ready to give anything to get the money. You know, like US is wonderful country, PPP program, EIDL program, all these programs is wonderful, but it's not global. US is one country, there is UK, maybe something else. All other countries, they don't provide such options. And to get the money in other countries is tremendously difficult. So people are ready to share everything. This is the first thing. The second thing, people definitely need support. Unfortunately, in the US, 78% of SMBs, they have no idea about accountancy, marketing processes, and so on. They always count on third parties, if they have third parties and money for these third parties. So right now, there is the perfect timing for the banks to fight for the market. And those who will be helping their clients to become more efficient, who will help them to pass this difficult period, they will get the most. So from our perspective, lots of things are changing. SMBs are definitely in problems, and luckily your country is supporting them, but not all the countries support their SMBs.
So what would be the next stage in development for UpSWAT in their products to make all of this connectivity easier?
Let's say like this. According to our plans, we have like a couple of roadmaps. Technical roadmap is obviously connect more data sources from one angle. From another angle, we are moving in so-called propensity modeling. Having access to this data, even on banking premises, we want to predict what the client of the bank will need in future. So right now, we know when he is going to leave the bank and switch to another one. We know when he has sufficient funds on account in another bank to open deposit. What we want to know, when he will need one more loan during the next 6 months, when he will need to buy airplane tickets during the next 6 months. So this is the way where we are going technically. From the perspective of the business and company development, we are completely focused on the US. This is the biggest global market. You could build really a great country. And if we are successful here, we will be successful everywhere. So the most important for us at this stage is to hire salespeople in the US, native speaking guys who finish these local universities, who has huge network. And by the way, if you know some great people, I would be very grateful for any advice.
So, you know, we typically hear from companies that are based, as John mentioned, in the US or in the EU, but mostly really in the UK, right? But I'm wondering, you know, since you did come from the Ukraine, can you speak about your background, sort of how you got into the space, and also maybe about the fintech landscape in the Ukraine or in the Russian-speaking world?
Yes, of course. So like regarding our company, this is our second startup. The first one unfortunately failed, but it gave us huge experience. It was also pretty like close to the fintech, but it was more about development tools. So this company is purely fintech, and my partners, all of us in some manner, we are bankers. So personally me, I was responsible for debt collection for many years in big debt collection companies as a private consultant. My partners, they were managing developers, coding, managing the projects for system integration companies and banks for many years. So like we have some experience in this field. And when we started scaling our experience to the countries out of Eastern Europe, we got more. We understood that the problem is the same everywhere. SMB is something that the banks don't completely understand, unlike consumers and corporates. Regarding the fintech landscape, what can I say, guys? The most important that, unfortunately, in the countries of the former USSR, there is lack of culture, let's say, lack of culture of helping each other, lack of culture of sharing the feedback, lack of money. And for example, in Ukraine, there is maybe a couple of venture funds only. In Russia, there is more, but not too many. It's impossible to compare even with Poland, which is a small country, but growing really fast. If you're talking about fintech, the regulation is pretty difficult in Eastern Europe. No matter what you do, you need to sign tons of papers. That's why, for example, UK is an example how the business, how the government should support fintech startups to grow their business, because it's much cheaper. It's very open procedures. And the example of open banking is the example that the rest of the European Union and especially the US should follow. So Ukraine is like 200 years, like let's say the US and the UK are 200 years up front of the Eastern Europe in their relationship, in building relationship and supporting fintechs and startups. So lots of things should be improved in Eastern Europe, and hopefully in time that will happen.
So there's a lot of skepticism in terms of investing your money in somebody else that closely like that, huh?
No, I don't like any startup that is coming from Eastern Europe, if it is a successful company, especially if they have nice team, great team, in any case, they will scale to the biggest global markets. That would be North America and Western Europe. No matter what will happen, they will be unfortunately incorporated in these markets. Maybe they will have developers in Ukraine, like in our company, but all the IP will be in the US, in the UK, maybe in France, in Germany, but not in Ukraine. This is a wonderful country, but this country has problems with the legal system, with corruption. And until this changes, I don't believe that the startup industry will boom there, will grow really fast. If the startups are willing to transfer the IP and incorporate in other countries, this is the market that won't grow really fast. But hopefully in time, this will change. Right now, I don't believe that this will happen in the next 10 or 15 years. But maybe I'm wrong.
Well, yeah, the more upswats there are, the more that will help, I guess.
But, yeah, that's why we are a US company. But still, for example, we have developers in Ukraine. So this is competitive advantage also. For example, we can hire a developer, very qualified developer for $2,500 a month. And he might be 20 years of experience in coding. It's impossible to have the same expenses in San Francisco or in Charlotte or in Boston. You know?
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah, for sure.
It's funny you say that because actually we've seen a lot of companies that have a lot of development resources in the Ukraine, right? Or in Eastern Europe to kind of save the cost of being in San Francisco because you're based in Walnut Creek now. And yes, as our listeners can imagine, that's a very expensive market to hire any devs or any technical folks, right? So how do you approach that difference in your development work? Do you still have people back in the Ukraine that you can rely on, or do you hire only locally?
Yes, my partners, my co-founders, they are mostly technical people. They are based in Ukraine and they are managing our technical team. And we know where we can hire, for example, 200 engineers, professionals, in just a couple of weeks. And that will cost us, comparing with the US companies, native US companies, very affordable amount of money, let's say. So, and probably we will move in the same way. Technical department, most of the data science team will be based in Eastern Europe, while salespeople, operations, like business people, they will be based in the US. And we use this advantage because you will be probably surprised if I say you, but in Ukraine, if you are self-employed, you just pay 5% in taxes.
Wow.
Yes. And the salaries are, comparing with the US, are very low, but the quality of the engineers is great. And you know, like mentality in any case is pretty close. It's like European culture, US, Ukraine, Belarus, Germany. In any case, we are in some meaning close. Mm-hmm. And there is an option to develop the companies, and we are using this. But there are also some disadvantages. For example, like, it's very difficult to bring our CTO to the US very fast if we need him to see here, you know? So in some time, definitely the most important people in the team, they will relocate. It's necessity if you want to grow on this market. But mostly in the US, our company, maybe we will change our decisions. It's normal to change the decisions. Mostly all our resources will be invested in the local people, local professionals in the US from the business angle of the company development.
Right, right. Like you were saying, the people with a lot of connections and and know the system here, sure.
Yeah, and with this mentality, like I came here 10 months ago and still, like, you know, there was one story I wrote to one gentleman in on LinkedIn asking, he doesn't reply. And I am asking him, like, sir, what is wrong? You know, if you translate this in Ukrainian, that would be very like nice. What is wrong with us? Can you provide your feedback? What happened with us? But in the US, as I just recently found out, this is a little bit, you know, like different tone. If I told this correctly, like it's not that level polite and professional, and this differences in mentality, in language, you know, like because you're not native to this country, it creates some issues sometimes. That's why native people are very important.
Yeah, it's funny how you mention the outsourcing for Eastern Europe. You know, being here right near Silicon Valley, I always think of India as the outsourced technical side.
Like from what I see, Indian professionals, they are everywhere, and that's great. This is a big country with lots of people, very motivated to reach success. And yes, like in the banks, in software development companies, everywhere there are people coming from India, and that's wonderful. In Ukraine, unfortunately, there is something around 40 million of people and not so many developers. But the quality of the engineers is really high. And the people are ready to work for companies from abroad because this is the way for them to get stable income in very respectful currency. And this is the way for them to grow mentally, you know, and technically even, because the way the business is done in Eastern Europe is not the same way that the business should be done in the US. So yes, in some meaning, Ukraine, Russia, Belarus, they are competitors to India. But from what I see, we got different markets. Yes. So like I have a friend, he is working in one of the biggest companies in San Francisco. And yes, for him, relocation to San Francisco was the next step for his family and for himself. And he could earn much more than rather working for one of the biggest companies in Russia. So obviously money are important, but after the crisis, who knows what will happen with San Francisco. As far as I know, lots of families are relocating to Charlotte, to Austin, to Boston, and other cities which are cheaper, more affordable. The question is if they will have the same salaries after relocation. So we will see this very soon.
That's a very good point. Yeah, I think I've seen some data that essentially the model that you have now will become more prevalent as you have sort of the business and the BD folks in the Bay Area or in a high cost city, and then the development resources, some are a little more cheaper, like the Ukraine or in India or in Belarus or other places. So yeah, this is
or Kansas, I think, or Oklahoma.
Or Kansas, yeah, exactly, or Austin, yeah. That really makes sense.
Yeah, so lots of things are changing, and that's wonderful that your team of two people created such a way to share their thoughts from different companies coming from different parts of the world, because we can combine different opinions and understand better what is happening on our planet. So yes, because I can take a look from one angle with my experience, with my expertise. The other guys that you talked with, they can take a look from another angle, and that's great.
So you mentioned that you came to the U.S. and you kind of got a foothold in the U.S. market via the Berkeley Skydeck. Can you tell us a bit about that program and how that works and how that worked for you specifically?
Yes. So like with my previous company, I had experience with the acceleration programs in New York. And when we created this company, we were once accepted to Techstars Barclays in Israel, but we decided not to join. With the Skydeck, the story was really interesting for us because it's not just acceleration program. First of all, the length of the program is 7 months. They give you the office space in Berkeley. You get resources of the university. So there were some companies that, for example, created some hardware devices and they could use laboratories of the university free of charge. This is huge, you know, for them. On the top of this, for example, for our fintech company, the university provided us with 50 data scientists to help us to build better models free of charge.
Wow.
And that's huge. Yes, yes, this is what Skytech is doing. This is what Skytech is doing because it's not acceleration program. It's acceleration program powered by the biggest venture funds and the university and resources of the university. And they invest $100,000 as a safe for 5% of the company. But they know everyone. You get access to the alumni of the university. This is really nice. You know, like on LinkedIn, you type, go Bears. Can you help? Yes, and sometimes it helps. It really helps. That's why I'm saying that in Eastern Europe, there is no such a culture to help each other, to share the experience, to share the feedback. In the US, this is what happens. And Skytech, on the top of this, they connect with the funds. Obviously, any startup you need to raise. You need to raise if you want to grow. And you can get access to the best funds in the valley. And these people are helping. For example, like Konstantin Büchler from Sequoia, Adam Carlson from Point72. These guys, they are not just invest. They are trying to help the startups. And this is wonderful. Recently, one of the funds in Boston, this is Vestigo Ventures, they refused to invest in our company. By the way, because of my stupid mistakes while passing this process of building relationship with the fund. But after they refused, they in details explained what they liked, what they didn't like. They're building relationship with the people. And if I meet the early stage company, despite the fact that we didn't get their support, I will recommend these guys. Because they are supportive, you know? Feedback is very important. And Skydeck is like, this is the value of the Skydeck. They connect with tons of people. And if you are coming from abroad, having another language, mentality, experience, they will explain you what should you improve, how you should improve. So that's why I highly recommend even local companies to pay a lot of attention to this acceleration program.
You know, we don't realize it here when we were born and raised here, but I remember going to the Maker Faire where people share all of their creations and innovations and, you know, some software things, you know, a lot of hardware, robotics, all that, a lot of interesting ideas. And they'll show you, they'll have the open source code. I don't know if you've heard of this before, but it's really great when the quarantine is over, if you see this, because it's just a bevy of creativity. And I remember I was with somebody from a different country saying that nobody would share like this where they're from, revealing how they build the product and sharing and handing out sheets with instructions and websites of how they could develop their own products based on what they had done. I take that for granted that there's just that openness that people want to be creative, share it, and just put things out there in the world and partner up.
Yes, this is the most exciting, to share the ideas, share your experience, help each other. Because by helping your peers, you're helping yourself, you grow together. And this is like the culture that has, from my perspective, US, obviously Canada, Israel, yes. This is like so small country with so many problems on the borders, but they could build this mentality, this culture of helping each other and building the best tech companies in the world. UK, Spain and France is going in the same direction, while unfortunately my native country, my native region, we have so many things to improve to move the same way. But maybe if the companies from Ukraine, Belarus are coming to the Silicon Valley, Charlotte, New York, and building successful ventures, that will like give this push to more companies, to more people moving the same way, and that will develop the culture.
Yeah, well, certainly your energy is very contagious. I feel like excited for you guys now. But it looks like you're doing great work. Keep up the good work, and thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks a lot, guys, for the invitation. That was really important for me and a great experience for all our team.
Yeah, that was Dmitry Narenko, CEO of UpSWAT, originally from the Ukraine, but now based here in right near Silicon Valley. Hopefully, you'll hear about them soon. You'll have to join us before the IPO.
Thanks. Of course, I will definitely do this. Thanks a lot.
Great. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.